is Kareem Taylor for Promax BDA's Daily Brief Podcast, and today I have the pleasure of talking with Johnny Lopez, who is an editor at Warner Brothers, where he also writes and produces promos. Now, Johnny, how did you get that job?
Well, so during Promo Pathways, which is the year-long intensive that kind of, you know, produced both of us, I met with a WB exec at our portfolio night, which is just a night where the program invites a bunch of industry professionals to come down and review our work. And this WB guy by the name of Chris Green just really liked me. He really liked my stuff, but I think beyond that, he really liked me as a person. I remember on our graduation day, I was lucky enough to give a speech, and he flagged me down afterwards and said, "Dude, like you're a really cool guy. You produce really good work, and I really want you at Warner Brothers." And he invited me to apply, and I think, you know, within a matter of 5-7 days, we turned it around, and I was already there.
Wow, I love that story. And so you were at graduation. It kind of is not even something you were expecting. You showed your work and bam.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it was real nice.
Did you share your work at the conference as well? You talked about sort of sharing it at...
We had a competition, right? We had one of those promo competitions. I think the prompt was to do a 30 or 60 second spot that kind of described who you are as a person, but the only catch was that you couldn't be in it yourself. Your voice couldn't be in it. Your image mm-hmm. couldn't be in it. The likeness of you couldn't be in it at all. You just had to kind of promote yourself as if you were a brand, and you were doing some sort of a brand spot. So what I did was I took like 10 or 15 different promos that I was just loving at the time, whether it was like a Honda commercial, a Levi's commercial. I remember there was a couple travel Australia commercials, just messaging that I'd really, really liked and kind of like had written down. And I pulled all those commercials apart, and then using footage from all of them, I was able to kind of create this brand spot about not just myself, but the generation of people that I represented. And then I got second place. I got second place at the competition, at the conference. They showed it on the big screen. It was really nice. I got to see it and everything.
Wow.
And then that kind of brought a lot of attention to me, which is nice because, you know, aside from people that I know very well, like yourself, I'm not the most, you know, I mean, avid talker and networker. And I think it was my kind of way to get my name out there was by creating work that encouraged people to come talk to me.
Awesome.
You know what I mean? Cause right. I wasn't very good at talking to them.
And so you showed your work, got into Warner Brothers, and now you've been at Warner Brothers for how long so far?
About 5 years, man. I did take some time off to go live in China. But 5 years.
So 5 years, and now you were in Promo Pathway, and now this year you're going to be coaching a Promo Pathway student. And you don't know who you're going to be coaching yet, but now you're sort of coming full circle a little bit.
Yeah, man. It's actually a big part of who I am. It's a big part of how I was raised. Like, I actually came out of the Boys and Girls Club circuit. You know what I mean? Like, when I graduated from college, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, so I went back into the institution that, you know, made me who I am, the Boys and Girls Club, and I was kind of like helping, you know, foster relationships with a lot of young people then, and I found Promo Pathways that way, and now that I'm here, like, that's still kind of an enormous part of my mentality. My philosophy is to always like turn around and giving back to the people within that institution or within that struggle, you know what I mean, to make it to the top, right? You get as high as you can, and then you turn around and you help someone else up, right? Like on the shoulder of giants, we all stand taller, kind of thing.
Right. And so we're going to talk about a little bit more of that later, sort of how you found out about the program and sort of what your experience was in Promo Pathway. But for now, I really kind of want to talk about what is it that you do every day at Warner Brothers?
Right. So like you said, I'm an editor, but I write and produce. They really encourage us to write and produce a lot of our stuff. And it's not just promos. It's mostly promos. But it's really just a ton of marketing pieces, whether it be like behind the scenes interviews or some sort of like electronic press kit, or even just like pulling aside just clips of various shows that are going to go with to the press so that they can really cut up their own promos But even sitting down with the graphics department and kind of conceptualizing the look and the feel of a spot, and then bringing all those graphics to life with sounds and everything. So it's really the whole gambit of conceptualizing to finishing promotional materials for all of Warner Brothers' content that airs on TV, right? So I'm on the worldwide television marketing, but again, like, you have channels who will run The Matrix. You will have Scooby-Doo. You will have The Big Bang Theory, Friends. So it's a lot of content. We touch things that come from our gaming department. Shadow of Mordor comes to mind very recently because they were just at E3. Anything that needs to be promoted that could end up on TV, we touch.
And what are some of the projects you're working on right now? Like, what's on your table, or what are some projects that you've worked on that you're really proud to be like, I worked on that?
Yeah, man. Like I love trailers. I think that's really one of the big things, one of the big draws to this kind of work. And I think some of my favorite stuff has been able to touch movies that I really loved. The Last Samurai was one that I really, really enjoyed putting like a little promo package for, because that was going to be airing on TV. Mm-hmm. I think I put together a lot of really funny stuff for Two and a Half Men when I was working on that. And very recently, like, I've been working on some things for Mike and Molly, because again, these things live endlessly in syndication, so they still need like up to date promotions, even when the shows have finished their first run. So just kind of like going through all these old shows and trying to make them as funny as possible for people, particularly shows like Friends and Big Bang Theory, people who've been watching it over and over again.
Right. Now, you mentioned you were in the Boys and Girls Club. I'm curious, how did you all of a sudden start creating the star promos, getting shown at the conference, all of a sudden become this star editor, writer, producer? And how did you do? Were you doing the same thing at the Boys and Girls Club? Are those two things connected?
Well, first off, I'm far from a star editor. You know what I mean? Like I do the best I can. But I think even before the Boys and Girls Club, kind of my biggest passion in life was to tell stories, man. And I think with keeping, especially like some of the smaller kids entertained every day, through programming or through just like daily interactions, it was kind of like weaving a thread of some sort of narrative that they could follow, that they could understand. And in a lot of ways, kind of that's what a promo is, right? It's you're trying to kind of thread together a narrative that is so simple to understand that you can grab it in 30 seconds, 20 seconds, 10 seconds,
right.
That is engaging enough for someone to remember it, and to advertise content that people really want to experience. You know what I mean? And I think at the Boys and Girls Club, when I was programming for kids, I think that was an enormous part of it without really thinking about it. But I think the one thing that has always transcended both the Boys and Girls Club and the Warner Brothers, and has been an extremely beneficial component of my success at Warner Brothers, is that I've always loved telling stories.
Where was that moment where you found out about the program? What were you doing, and how did you find out about Promo Pathway?
Sure. I was at the Boys and Girls Club. So I was working at the Boys and Girls Club, like I said, right out of college, and I'd probably been there for maybe four years at the time. And the Boys and Girls Club of Santa Monica has had a ton of partnerships with SMC, Santa Monica College. So a couple representatives came into our teen center, and they were talking to our kids. They were saying, hey, look, like the four-year model isn't necessarily for everybody. Some people, you know, are trying to figure out what they want to do, or some people who know what they want to do can really benefit from this kind of like almost like an apprenticeship model, right? Like where you go in for this an intensive time with people that are already in the industry, and you
right.
kind of like shadow them, work with them, and all that kind of stuff. And you graduate in 1 year, 2 years, with all the skills needed to succeed in that particular industry. As you can imagine, when you're pitching this to 17 and 18-year-olds, high school seniors, they're not super interested. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
they barely know who they are, let alone what they want to do. And at the time, you know what I mean, the more ambitious ones wanted to go to four-year colleges, and, you know, the less ambitious ones weren't even thinking about college, period. So they made this pitch, and none of our kids were biting. I think the program was only 2 years old at the time, so it didn't even have this enormous reputation. And I remember listening to it and being like, dang, like I didn't even think about editing promos. You know what I mean? So I went up to them and I said, hey, could anybody sign up? And they were like, yeah, yeah, of course. So I threw my name in the bag, in the hat really early on.
Right. And you didn't even go to college. So you majored or got your degree in English language and literature, which is storytelling, you know, I mean, is creative writing and all of that stuff. And so were you editing even while you were in university?
Nah, man, actually this program, so 5 years ago, or no, 6 years ago was when the first time I ever really touched an editing program. Like up until then, I'd only been kind of telling stories on paper. I graduated, like you said, from Cal State Channel Islands with a bachelor's in English, because I really was convinced I wanted to write novels back then. Yeah, I mean, I really wanted to tell stories. That's how obsessed I was, how passionate I was with that. And I had a professor, Brad Monsma, who taught us out of a collection of short stories called River Teeth. And it really was an exercise in brevity. The river teeth being these logs that would kind of get lodged between the bank and the river, and as the river would course through it, it would tear away at it, and what was left was these little like jagged edges of wood that were called river teeth, and that was essentially my first lesson in promo without knowing it was he wanted us to take our stories and really just run through them until all that was left was the thematic, the most significant elements, the parts of the story that couldn't be changed. And again, years later, that was one of those things where I can really kind of point back in and be like, oh, that's when I learned how to write a promo. That's how I really learned how to do that, was being able to take a story that would normally be told in 2 hours, in 40 minutes, in 22 minutes in some cases,
right?
And then tell it again in 30 seconds.
You know, what's interesting is, I feel like I was the same way though, but kind of speaking on the promo pathway idea was when I first found out about the program, I saw all these logos for a bunch of different TV networks. And I was like, okay, this is official. I already was familiar with Promax BDA as an organization. And I was like, okay, this is a great thing to move to LA. I was like, this is a great way to move to LA. Maybe I'm not just going to go to LA. This is a great reason. And so, but I still didn't know what to expect. I still was like, yeah, I don't really know what this is. You know, it's not a ton of content or things like that I could really kind of grasp onto. And I really kind of was just like, you know what, I'm just going to go. And so where were you when you were like, you know what, I'm just going to go? Is that how you felt or sort of what was your first day like when you arrived?
When I arrived in the program, when I arrived like in Warner Brothers,
when you got into the promo pathway, like your first day, and you saw what it was and you was like, okay, I'm doing this.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I think like there's really four positions that are ubiquitous with the entertainment industry. And that's writing, directing, acting, and probably even producing. And that's really only for long form, like TV shows and films. No one talks about like, oh, I'm going to be a promo writer. And even it's more fashionable Big Brother trailer writing and cutting. Like, I feel like I never really met anyone who was like excited about it.
Right.
So when I figured out that's exactly what it was, once I was really like in there, I was like, oh man, this is really dope. Like, I'd always thought that commercials and promos just kind of burst out of the ether. You know what I mean? Like, not knowing who touched them or who did them. And then I got really excited, man. Like I got to say, I went home that night and I watched like the whole first season of Mad Men. And I was like, oh man, I'm going to be a fucking ad man. You know what I mean? It was just like, I'm going to be an ad man. Like, that's, I'm going to be able to shape the conversation about brands, about how people feel about certain things. Cause in a lot of ways we shape how people think and how people feel about a lot of these things. Right. That's what the most conscious desire of any promo is to shape the brand, whatever they represent. And in very powerful ways. And I think over the years, especially the last 3 to 5 years, we've really seen it change. Like people telling really, really powerful stories in such a short medium. And once I was being exposed to that, once they were showing us all the award-winning stuff, I fell in love with it, man. I was just like, oh my God, I wanted to tell stories, you know, my whole life. And now I tell them every day. But they're only, you know, significantly shorter. And I think sitting in that class and, like, again, seeing some of the stuff that they were showing us and being in the company of the people that I was with, like, it was extremely excitable. You know what I mean? The excitement was contagious in that room. And I think that was the most special part of it.
Right. It's kind of interesting when you really kind of think about how I think most recently, I can't remember where it was, but some conference somewhere, Facebook and the Instagram team were sort of teaching marketers how to cut promos or 3-second promos or 6-second promos for YouTube. It was the Google team as well. So they were, you know, how do you position it for YouTube? And so, you know, there's like a whole, you know, you can edit documentaries, you can edit films. No one knows about the people who edit promos and, yeah. You know, but these are the people, but now it's becoming like this short form storytelling is actually becoming extremely important on the platforms that, you know, on these sort of, new platforms. Now you can tell a story in 3 seconds and that's all you have. And, you know, maybe you have a competitive advantage. You know, knowing how to tell really quick stories.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. And again, like drawing back from my English background, like it's also a concept that's existed for a long time. It's just the medium changed it forever. It allowed you to include visuals and audio for context to really kind of like heighten the kind of story that you want to tell. But one of the things that kind of popped into my mind was when we were looking at like I think it was Hemingway that made the 6-word stories really famous. What's the oh man, hold on to me. For sale, baby shoes never worn. Yeah. And that spoke to me. I was just like, man, like that's really all it is. It's like you had to start with the emotion. You had to like really get to it fast. And again, it was a supremely valuable lesson in promo, because again, the concept isn't new, but like this medium is finally learning to adopt these old concepts, or maybe not even finally learning, but is in a very conscious way,
right?
Like making you feel something important too.
Now, Johnny, when I met you, I was in the PromoX, I was in the Promo Pathway program, and I was sitting down. You came in as a speaker, and you started talking about storytelling similar to how you're talking about it right now, from sort of a psychological perspective, and talking about emotion and sort of tapping into those things and putting those into the promos. And as someone who was, you know, still deciding, like, okay, what is this? What exactly are these things? And it's kind of crazy to think back, because now I feel like I just know it all. I feel like I just know everything for some reason, but I don't know everything. But, you know, it's kind of like you go from like not knowing what it is to like really having a total like kind of understanding of what a promo is and just what this business is. But when you came and spoke, I really had no idea, and sort of met this young guy from Warner Brothers, and you were talking about psychology of storytelling. And I was like, I'm staying in this program. I'm here. This is why I came. This is why I'm in Los Angeles.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah.
So how have you sort of carved your perspective? I spoke recently with a creative director from Sony Pictures, and who was on the podcast, Kasumi Mahori, and she sort of talked about having perspective. How have you sort of honed in on what your perspective is to telling stories?
I mean, like it's true with any perspective. I think it's something that you kind of build over an entire lifetime. Like, it's really difficult to kind of, at least for me, it would be really difficult for me to pinpoint like the origin of my perspective on storytelling. I think it's I was exposed throughout my entire life on various stories that have affected me in truly profound ways, stories that have stuck with me. And I think between growing up where I did, going to college where I did, and working with the kind of people that I've had the privilege to work with, I've slowly, I mean, picked apart their philosophies. I've slowly picked apart the psychology that they carried with them about storytelling, and I've kind of pieced together my own, which then kind of drives me in the direction. Hold on, let me see how do I want to phrase this. It drives me in the direction of the kind of stories I want to tell. You know what I mean? And then in that, it becomes something bigger than just the story, because you're coming from a such a deliberate place of knowing this isn't just the kind of story I want to tell. This is what I want my story to do. This is how I want my story to make you feel. And again, I don't think these are uncommon principles in storytelling. I think it's always been about connecting with individuals, right? The first story ever told was to let someone else know a world apart from you that what you do isn't lonely. It's not on your own. Like there's an entire culture, there's an entire people. Everyone is doing this, right? That's why we tell stories, right? So we can relate to other people, so that other people can realize that they are not so alone in this world. And I think that's such an amazing purpose for storytelling that it would be a shame to kind of leave that behind. Like every story told, whether it be a blockbuster film or a commercial advertising Apple's HomePod, it should be about letting people know that they're not as alone as they are. And a wonderful commercial that Spike Jonze recently directed for the HomePod that did absolutely that. It was completely relatable. The product was in there, but it was really just about a person who just like you, like is tired after a long day. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's powerful, man.
Right, and so what? Going back to the Promo Pathway program, with you sort of being in it, did you have any mentors? Did you have anyone sort of guiding you along the way? Any professors that sort of stood out to you in the program?
Yeah, I mean, like Walt Louis to this day, who teaches editing, I'm in contact with, you know what I mean? To this day, I still talk to the guy. Kim Edelman, who was my assigned mentor, in the program, I still talk to. I mean, we would once a month for years after the program ended, still go watch movies. We watch movies and then we tear them apart. And we, you know, because that's really like my favorite thing to do is to sit down and take apart film. So anyone who's willing to sit down with me and say, okay, what did you just see? Now let's run it through this roaring river and like tear everything away from it so that we're left with just the thematic elements that mattered most. And then let's talk about it, man. Like, I think the coolest thing about the mentors that I've had is that they weren't interested in so much teaching me how to be a strong editor. They knew that I would learn that eventually. They weren't super interested in teaching me how to be a strong producer. You know what I mean? Time will eventually fill that gap. They were just interested in making sure that, like, from the most basic element, I could take any kind of story and break it apart into its most significant thematic elements, and then that I could describe those very coherently. You know what I mean? Very intelligently. Because as long as I can do that, then I could reverse engineer any story. And if I can reverse engineer any story, then I can tell any kind of story in any amount of time.
They say you have to know the rules before you can break them.
Exactly. Like, they didn't want me stabbing at the dark, and which I feel like I've seen a lot of people who have done that, particularly with storytelling. They don't want to learn the mechanics of it because they feel that it'll kind of pigeonhole them, or it'll lock them into a place that they don't want to be. But I think it is true in storytelling, it is true in life, that you cannot break away from something until you understand it. You know what I mean? Until you know where the walls are. Otherwise, you're just kind of walking around with your eyes closed.
Now, I'm probably going to step all the way back because I'm not sure I asked you this question, but I really want to get this in there before we wrap up. But what exactly do you do on a daily basis? Like, what did today look like for you when you walked into work?
Oh, sure, man. So today, like, I'm working on some sweepstakes spots. So the movie Life of the Party is coming out, starring Melissa McCarthy, who was also involved in our TV show Mike and Molly. So it's kind of like a cool marketing opportunity for us to kind of collaborate with theatrical and say, hey, look, if you're watching Mike and Molly this week, like, you can stand to win tickets to go see the movie. So in collaboration with theatrical, who gives us a bunch of movie elements here in television where I have access to multiple episodes of the show, and then with our legal department, who has, you know, defined very clear, very specific rules on how to win and work in this sweepstakes, like I'm trying to put together something that is exciting, something that is informative, something that is funny, and something that encourages people to watch the show. It gets them excited about watching the movie and tells them in a very lively, colorful, exciting way how they can participate in the sweepstakes. And then I have to do all of that in 30 seconds. Right. So it's like so you have all these puzzle pieces that have to go into making this puzzle coherent, but there's no rules. There's nothing that's right. telling you where each piece goes. So that's what my day looks like, working awesome. with our graphics department to try to get a look for the whole spot. Because a lot of this information is going to be told in graphics, and everything has to be match the theme of the promo, or whether it's the theme of the show that we're going to lean on, or the theme of the movie that we're going to lean on, and just kind of get tell a coherent story with all these pieces that sometimes are conflicting.
And how long is it going to take you to finish that?
Well, it depends. Like right now, like I probably have 2 days to turn it around.
Wow.
Which again will be good, and then after those 2 days, I will have to go through a series of notes, and if everything gets approved, we go into cutdown. So I have to kind of try to keep the messaging as together as possible while getting it down to 20 seconds.
And what would you say to someone right now who's sort of considering maybe even applying to the Promo Pathway program, considering being a part of the same thing that you were a part of in terms of submitting your work, getting it shown at the conference, or even signing up to have it seen at the showcase? What sort of advice would you give to someone?
Advice? I mean, because advice is something that's really important to me. I mean, like, I think the cocktail for success has been made a million times over. And because of that, like all the ingredients or all the advice that goes into making someone successful has kind of crossed over to cliche. You know what I mean? And when good advice crosses over to cliche, it becomes impotent. You know what I mean? It's like, it's no longer good advice. Don't get me wrong. It's really good advice. It's just not relatable anymore. So I try to stay away from things like never give up. You know what I mean? Like that, when was the last time never give up really lift your spirits? I mean, really convince you that you could do something. It's just not the case. Same thing with passion, man. You can tell people, it's like, you just got to be passionate about it. But like, passion is such a complex thing that people have lived and died without really, really grasping. So my advice, if I can make it as tangible as possible, something that people can really apply is really twofold. I got it. So there's really two pieces of advice that I would give. The first is just volume, man. Like whatever it is that you want to do, just produce a lot of it. Like if you want to make cut promos, man, a lot, a ton. You know what I mean? What's that, the 10,000 hour principle?
Right.
Right, you have to 10,000 hours of deliberate practice to become world class in any field, and I think that's really where you have to start. Like, if this is what you want to do, start doing it, because you got to get ahead of those hours and just make a lot, make a ton of stuff, make really good stuff, make really bad stuff, make mediocre stuff, make all the stuff that exists in that spectrum. And that's what in the program, we were required to cut 5 promos for our capstone project. I cut 16.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like it's just volume, man. There's no way to get better at anything other than volume. That's it. If you want to write in volume. If you want to make music in volume. If you want to film, make film in volume. Just volume would be the first one. And then the second one would probably be to just kind of surround yourself with people who will support you, who will pick up the pieces. I think I've heard a lot of people say, like, oh, if you didn't get it, that's okay. If you don't get into the program, that's okay. If you aren't successful, that's okay. But I think, like, we should be vulnerable enough to let ourselves feel like it's not okay, because it makes us really try. Yeah, I mean, if it's okay if we fail, then failing isn't the worst thing in the world. But if you really like commit yourself to feeling the pain of that failure, you'll work much harder because you don't want to fail. And then allowing this group of people to then pick up the pieces on your behalf. I mean, surrounding yourself by people who will let you push yourself to the brink. And then if you do fail, that they're the ones that help put you back together. Because if you're doing things, not so much half-assed, but I'm saying like if you're doing things with the notion of, well, if I fail, it's not the biggest deal, then your heart won't ever really be in it. And your heart has to be in it, man.
Johnny Lopez, editor at Warner Brothers. Thank you for chatting with me today.
Yeah, of course, man. Anytime, anytime.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provides the music. Digital producer Kate LaKire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craig contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack and follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. And you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, and now on Spotify. Thanks for listening.